Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We got a lot to get into this week. L'Jarius Sneed, he spoke to the media for the first time. There's some comments to discuss there, whether it be the injury, the contract. We'll jump into all of that. Rand Carthon and his comments on the Green Dot, very enlightening. I didn't even think of the perspective, so I'll definitely make sure we discuss that. In the meantime, we are looking at a show today that's going to have Matt Waldman. He is a senior staff writer for Football Guys, and he's also the creator of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. Folks, you are in for a treat. It's always good to talk shop with him. And every week, you know what we do. We bust it up. We chop it up with that old fish-eyed fool, Chris Sanders, forever Titans receiver, run TMC. We'll get into that. We got David James making it happen.
Yes, sir.
Man, it takes a lot to put all this stuff together, but this is what we do each and every week. And I guess right from the rip, man, let's talk about L'Jarius Sneed, right? And you look at how he was introduced to the Titans media for the first time, and he spoke about just the connection that he had with Denard Wilson, how he feels that he's going to be his type of coach, that aggressive style. And that's something last week we discussed, how that is a match there as far as just the approach to the game overall. It's definitely something that we'll watch develop. Also, the way he spoke of Rand Carthon and how he said Rand made him feel right at home, made him feel like family immediately. Rand told the interesting story about how they were in the cafeteria to grab his son, L'Jarius Sneed's son, a drink, and his mother was with them too. And look up on the wall, and there it is. They're showing him make a play against the 49ers. No, the Eagles in the Super Bowl. So that was pretty cool just to hear that story and just see Rand talk about the way things are coming together. But when you look at L'Jarius Sneed and the trade that happened, the contract that was signed, and we'll get into the contract in a minute, but first things first, the knees, right? That's something that's clearly an area of interest. So naturally, had to ask him about that when he spoke. Here's what he had to say about his knees.
Ain't nothing wrong with my knee. I'm fine. We played the whole season. And the years before that, I played as well. You know, I had a couple of problems. And I had banged up knee before. But I'm good right now. Nothing's really wrong with my knee.
So it's not a situation that you have to manage going forward.
You know, I know what to do with my knee. You know, I'm coming out here to play ball.
Gotcha.
Hey, you like to hear that, right? You like to hear, hey, listen, I know what to do with the knee. I'm here to play ball. Look, it's something that, although the knee may be fine, that's why I followed up with the question, so you know what to do to management. Because, look, you could have it be okay, but you just have to do a little bit of extra or take a little bit extra time off, et cetera, to allow it to be ready on game day. And the fact of the matter is this is a man who played 16 games last year. This is a man who played 949 snaps. No DB on the Chiefs played more snaps than him. So, look, I get the concern, and it should definitely be there, but I don't think that there's really too much worry that has to take place in regards to this knee. The contract, right? Obviously, Sneed, he wanted to be the highest paid corner. He felt like he should have been that just based off of his year that he had last year. We don't have to run through the murderer's row list of receivers that he's going to face. We don't have to run through the murderer's row list of receivers that he faced last year. But I don't see any world where he's not a top five corner. I don't see a world where that's the case. So you have that $19.1 million, $55 million guaranteed. Now, folks, we got to understand the difference between, like, fully guaranteed, injury guaranteed, those different things. There's a lot of, what's the word that I'm looking for? A lot of, lack of better terms, difference. You know what I mean? There's variance. That's the word I was looking for. So you look at this contract, right? The signing bonus is $20 million. And this is according to Pro Football Talk. Pretty good breakdown here of the contract, right? Again, it averages $19.1 million. It's a four-year deal. Signing bonus is $20 million. Base salary this year, 4.32. That is fully guaranteed. Now, he has a per-game active roster bonus of $680,000. It's fully guaranteed, but it has to be earned. How is it earned? Obviously, by playing games. Now, you roll that to next year. Base salaries, $18.32 million, fully guaranteed. Per-game active roster bonus, once again, $680,000. Fully guaranteed, but must be earned. 2026, base salary, $15.15 million. $11 million of that is guaranteed for injury at signing. $7.5 million of it becomes fully guaranteed on March 26th. In March of 2026. So you know how that works, right? You'll see, okay, like this year, it was March 18th. Hey, look, you got to cut Andre Dillard before March 18th if you don't want to take on his whole cap what it was going to be. Same thing here. So, you know, in 2 years, you will have known pretty much how things are looking as far as his health is concerned. But then if you do guarantee that 7.5, you got the per-game active roster bonus. Now, this isn't fully guaranteed, but it's $850,000 per game 2026. Base salary 2027, $15.5 million with that same $850,000 per-game active roster bonus in 2027. This deal is not as bad as it's being made out to be, okay? So you look at it, it's 0.7 or $0.8 million below the franchise tag salary, right? The cash flow this year is $25 million, $19 million in 2025. Now, remember, you have the per-game bonuses that have to be earned of $680,000. Ladies and gentlemen, this contract, the full guarantees, are $43.97 million. I think that's a bad deal for a corner that you will struggle to name five that are better than. There you have it right there. Yeah, there's questions, and the deal is outlined to kind of cover those questions. So a lot of people said that, you know, the Titans, you know, they questioned that their move and this, that, and the third. I think Vin Marino, and this is the type of stuff why Rand Carthon got up there and said thank you to Vin Marino, because Vin Marino is the contract guy. He's the one that's drawing all this up. He's the alchemist. You know what I mean? And you really have to shout him out for that. I think this is a good deal. Now, here's the thing, though, right? You look at this defense. Highly paid corners in Chidobe Awuzie, in Jarius Sneed. Imani Hooker has gotten a pretty good contract, you know, out of safeties are concerned. So you look at it and you say, hey, how is this defense built? I mean, looks like the secondary is going to be the strength. That's how it's built. But Rand Carthon has something different to say. He acknowledged that they're strong in the back, but I like the way he said they're not finished. Here's Rand Carthon on Tuesday.
Build a complete defense. You know, and in the past, we've had our strength be up front, you know, and that's kind of shifted right now, but we're still looking to address those positions as needed. From a free agency standpoint, free agency is open. It's not over. So we're going to continue to look, and then obviously we got the draft, which is taking our focus now. So we're going to continue to look to add, you know, up front on all sides of the ball. But we're still working on that.
You said that
free agency is not over. Notice that is something that was said last year as well. So if you look at the guys that are available, and we're just going to look at this front because, I mean, that's the main thing right now, and I'm talking about the front four. Right, we'll get into the linebacker position in a moment, the safeties also. But you look at this front, right? Carl Lawson, Yannick Ngakoue, no. Tyus Bowser, intriguing. It's not really much out there. Manny Agua, a little bit older, but maybe. Marcus Golden, you guys know every year he's someone I talk up. He's 33, I think it's kind of the ship has sailed for him for the most part, but you know, he's someone else. There's a lot of guys out there by count, by quality, no. So that takes us to the draft. We talked about Darius Robinson. Chris Braswell is a guy I think that has to be in the mix now. ESPN.com, we had a 32 for 32 where we looked at a later option in the draft to match each team. Adisa Isaac out of Penn State, and I've talked about him multiple times. We actually had a conversation with him at the Senior Bowl that we put on here as well. He is someone that I think they could get to be a situational player. But make no mistake about it, they're going to have to add help up front. The secondary looks good, but they're going to have to add help up front. And the draft doesn't seem like the place where you're getting it. Now, Carl Lawson is intriguing. A few years ago, you know, he was a top-level free agent, and he ended up going to the Jets. Injury hit him and just other stuff. And, you know, the Jets moved on, right? They made the Hassan Reddick acquisition. They drafted Will McDonald last year. And, you know, they've done some things. Jermaine Taylor as well. So they've added to their pass rush and moved on from Lawson. But nevertheless, defensive line, whether it's edge or if it's just, you know, up front, period, that's something that they need. And that's an area where they're going to have to address. But that's one of three areas, right? We still got the tackle situation, and we've dug in on that. But what about the inside linebacker position, the green dot? We talked last week with Chris Anders about that and just, you know, how it would be tough for a rookie that has to know his job already and struggle to do that and then know everyone else's. It's tough for a rookie to do that. Now, we didn't say it wasn't possible. We said it's tough for it. Here's Rand Carthon's perspective on that.
It's all about the person and the type of player. I've been my first year in Atlanta. We had a rookie second-round pick in Curtis Lofton. That was our Mike backer, but he was lying next to a veteran in Keith Brookie as our Will backer. And Keith wore the communicator that first year, and then Curtis took it over that second year. So, you know, it's about the person. You have some rookies. Fred Warner, that was a part of drafting. His first year, he was the green dot. So it's all about that person, what that person's comfortable with. And if they're able to handle the communication and they're a three-down player, then they'll be out there. I've seen teams, I want to say it was Eric Weddle, you know, when he was with the Chargers and when he was with the Rams, he wore the green dot. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a linebacker that does the communication. It's just about finding that person that's going to be able to do that and still effectively do their job.
Is there consideration for Kenneth Murray to wear that, or that's something you
know? No, we hadn't crossed that bridge yet. Okay. Honestly, we don't even have K-9 in the building right now. So he'll be here next week. And once they're able to get with our coaches, you know, I totally trust Coach Bush and Denard to figure out who's going to be the best to lead that group and get them lined up.
So there you have it right there. Very good point. Whereas, okay, you know what? It doesn't have to be the inside linebacker. It could be a safety. Imani Hooker comes into play there. But we know Imani Hooker has had bouts with injuries over the last couple of years. So he goes down. Then what? I think Hooker should get consideration there. I had some people reply to me in social media about his Curtis Lofton mention, Rand's mention of Lofton. Note, he did say, second year. He didn't say the first year. Keith Brookin wore it the first year, right? And then Lofton took over the second year. Obviously, Fred Warner, that wasn't the case. He was as a rookie. It could be done. It's just a tall task to ask. But I think, you know, outside of Jack Gibbons, I think that's going to be the only options to have a rookie do that. And so, because you look at the free agents, man, and it's tough, right? You know, Tyler Matakavich, he's 31. Zach Cunningham, already, you know, you don't circle the block. Dylan Cole, again, you don't circle the block. Quan Alexander, he's intriguing. 29 years old. He played in 9 games last year. He's intriguing with the Steelers. Shaq Leonard, look, man, like it's the back is the back is the back. Blake Martinez, you know, another Steeler. Yeah, I don't go for any of those. But then you look at the draft and there's some options. I know Temple's pro day was last week, and they were there. Jordan McGee is a guy I've watched throughout the year, but you know, I watched some of him on Wednesday, and he's somebody that I think could be an option. You know, 6'2", 223, pretty good at sorting his way to the football. There are some times where you see the linemen get their hands on him, and it's like, plays over. Not bad in coverage either, but he could be one of those guys, a green dot. Type of player. You know, you look at this group of linebackers in the draft, man. Like I said, you know, McGee is there. You got Steel Chambers out of Ohio State. A lot of people have made the connection of Cedric Gray and Edgerrin Cooper to the Titans. Jeremiah Trotter Jr. But it's just, if you do a guy like Trotter Jr., that's going to be a day two pick, already in a situation where you may only have two top 100 picks. So you got that. Peyton Wilson just remains. Like, he's somebody, I don't think that they touch him because of the history of knee injuries and the shoulder. But, man, oh, man, you put him in the mix there and you're really cooking with something. And don't forget the local guy, Junior Colston. You know, he's, you know, was it Brentwood? Brentwood product?
I think it's Ravenwood.
I knew it was one of the Woods, you know. But, yeah, he's another one. But, again, you're looking at a day two selection being used there. So it's going to be intriguing seeing how that works. You also look at the safety position. That's something else that is of need for this team. I did a couple mocks. I ended up going Tyler Rubin. Tyler, I always get his name. Tyler Rubin is his name. I ended up going with him. Newbin, rather. Excuse me. I ended up going with him out of Minnesota in a couple mocks. But you have to use like a top 40 type of pick. So he would be 38, you know. But there's options there. You look later, you got a guy like Malik Mustafa, who is a box guy. He has some range too, but, you know, then you go with Marcus Banks and his versatility out of Mississippi State. You know, there's options. So just wanted to dive into that a bit and discuss some things there. We're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back with Run TMC.
I want to tell you a little bit about Soho Footwear over there in Hendersonville. You need your sneaks, your J's, whatever you should need, man, definitely make sure you go check them out. You mentioned TD10 and you get $10 off of $100. And they have a wide selection. So if you're a guy who or girl who already has a nice catalog of J's and Air Force Ones, et cetera, they'll still have something for you. Just go check them out. And if you're brand new to it, hey, just let them know. They'll guide you in the right direction. So definitely make sure you check out Soho, S-O-H-O. 615.com. And again, they're in Hendersonville.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Here we go. The lights dim. The music fades. And now, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona. Starting at small forward for your Phoenix Suns. Out of the University of Cal State Fullerton. Number 23, Cedric Ceballos.
And now, your 1978 heavyweight champion of the world, Leon Spinks.
That is too funny.
That was missing. Oh, that's just so. I said in a respectful way. Yeah. You didn't know I was coming with that.
No, I didn't, man.
You thought it was Larry Holmes, so I was like, no.
Yeah, because I was about to tell you how I jump off the Cadillac on you.
What's going on, big man? You doing good? What's the word?
Hey, man, I'm doing well, man. I know you are, too. And, man.
Yeah, man.
Those Houston Texans are doing pretty well also, huh?
Oh, my gosh. Can you believe the receivers they're going to have out there, Diggs? What's the other kid?
Nico Collins.
Tank Dell.
Yeah, they got a lineup. What does that trade do for the Texans, and how do you think that it impacts C.J. Stroud? Because this is the reason why I asked that. Real quick, is because so many Titans fans are trying to talk themselves into this being a bad trade.
What?
Stephon Diggs is a really good player.
Okay.
So help me out here.
Have you heard of veteran leadership? Mm. a guy that understands the game, a guy that understands how to win, a guy who understands how to run routes, a guy who understands how to win, and then you got some young pups that are explosive like Tank Dell, and you got Nico that's a little older, but you got an explosive wide receiver core. I know everybody's talking about the Tennessee Titans with Calvin Ridley and, you know, Hop and Burks. That's a solid group. But now you're talking about Diggs. Now you talk about Tank Dell, and you talk about Nico Collins. That's a powerful receiving room, boss.
Yeah. Well, how do you think that affects Stroud? Because, oh, well, imagine having him in the ear of a second-year quarterback, and he demands touches. Imagine, like,
It's not about him demanding touches. It's just showing him where he wants the ball. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to say this. Just say if we're running a comeback and the safety falls, he throws up his hands, and as an experienced wide receiver, he just goes deep. Those are the things that C.J. Stroud can get better on. I mean, C.J. Stroud is a phenomenal quarterback. He came in as a rookie and really shocked the whole world because everybody didn't know how he was going to perform with the Texans. But now you added a wide receiver with veteran experience, knows how to win, understands how to run routes. He's not teaching just C.J. Stroud. He's teaching guys in that receiver room, T.D.
How much does this intensify the significance of signing Legarius Sneed, trading for and signing?
1,000%. Also, Woozier. Because look at all those, and then, you know, McCrary with the Tennessee Titans. I mean, look at all those receivers that we just named before. Mm-hmm. But you got to have some solid secondary guys because you got to cover those guys. I mean, if you look at the Achilles heels of what the Tennessee Titans had last year up front, they were pretty good. But the secondary was consistently giving up explosive plays. You got some explosive plays in receivers in the NFL. You got some explosive players on the Texans. You better make sure you have some cover guys, or you really get exploited.
Tell me a little bit about the group of guys that, because you got Stephon Diggs twice.
Oh, God.
You got Christian Kirk twice.
Oh.
You got Justin Jefferson, Christian Watson. who else is on the list? I mean, it's pretty
Curtis
extensive.
Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, you know.
And then St. Brown. I mean, all those guys.
They play Washington, right? Yeah, minor
yes,
St. Brown.
Yes.
They play Washington, so now you're looking at Terry McLaurin.
Yeah, McLaurin.
It's a lineup.
DJ Moore.
Oh. I remember they got Keenan Allen, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whew.
But see, here's the creative part about it is look at all those guys you named. You got Jamar Chase that had 7 touchdowns. You had Justin Jefferson, 5 touchdowns. You had Diggs that had 8 touchdowns last year. Don't forget about Garrett Wilson that had 3. DJ Moore had 8. Christian Watson had 5. Curtis Samuel had 4. You got St. Brown. I can't pronounce his first name. Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's a long name. He had 10 TDs. But now, this is the pretty part about it. Now you get a guy. How many touchdowns has Sneed given up last year?
I would say 0.
0. So you got all those guys that have a lot of touchdowns. So what do you go get? A guy that prevents guys from making touchdowns. That's how big this pickup is.
Yeah, and this is someone who truly travels with them. Going left, right, nickel. Wherever you go, I go. True cat coverage. I think that's something else that has to be documented.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's so cool about the whole situation is when they was doing this interview last year, and I know you asked him a question about facing the top receivers in the league. This is what he said to make the back of my hair stand up. He said, I really don't care. It's the mentality that I have or the attitude that I bring. It's about saying, okay, you're the best guy. Let me show you that I'm better. You don't think that's going to feed off from McCrary and all that secondary, Woozier and Hooker and different guys in the secondary? You don't think they're going to feed off the passion and the nastiness of Sneed? So it just makes everybody better. Attitude.
And the thing that's crazy is he talked about the aggressiveness and energy that he received from Denard Wilson. So it's really one of those things where it's from the top all the way through.
Yeah, because you're building identity on the defense, and what's your identity? Tough, nasty, and you want guys that want to fight. Who did you just bring in? Woozier wants to fight. You got Sneed that wants to fight. You got Elijah Moses that wants to fight. You got McCrary that'll fight anybody because he's just a physical specimen. So now you got guys that are fitting your identity and fitting your mold. Now let's sculpture this thing out and bring out something pretty.
I'm not sure if you heard Rand Carthon's comments about the green dot not always having to be the communicator, not always having to be a linebacker. He said that, you know, how it could be a rookie. Now, I know we discussed this, and for clarity, again, we didn't say that it was impossible for a rookie to do it,
right,
or a rookie can't do it. Just discussed how it was difficult.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on his comments, you know, as he looked back to Fred Warner as a rookie? look back to Curtis Lofton as a second-year player. Again, not a rookie, a second-year player. Or even Eric Weddle as a safety having that responsibility.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. Before you can ever become a teacher, you got to become a learner. And I think that's the key because, you know, everybody wants to immediately put in the teacher role, but how are you going to be a teacher if you don't know the material? So come in and learn from somebody that knows the position, that understands the position, and knows how to get people lined up. I'm going to give you a perfect example. When I played with the Tennessee Titans / Oilers, I came in, first of all, I came in as a sixth receiver. Then all of a sudden, when I started balling, I became the third receiver, you know, the first two games. Then once I learned from Haywood Jeffries and Derrick Russell, we used to call him D-Fuss because he fussed about everything. But I watched how they ran routes. I watched how they did, beat different covers. I asked questions. And once I understood that, and all of a sudden they put me in the second role, I went from being the learner to the teacher. So that's all it is you got to learn it first to become a teacher. And when you become a teacher, you help everybody else get better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's exactly – what could happen when you look at some of these guys that could come in. But what about the safety position? Is that an area where you feel like Namani Hooker could be the communicator?
I think he can. I mean, I just think that when you get in OTAs and when you get in walkthroughs and everything, I just want to see how much he can handle because Denard Wilson is going to make sure that everybody knows their assignments. And I think once he knows his assignments with a different defensive secondary, I think he can take that extra step of being like a Kevin Byard. I mean, Kevin Byard was making sure everybody's lined up, understanding, receiver patterns, all those things that make him that great safety guy. And I think Amani Hooker has that same ability, that same mindset, that if he picks it up, gets confidence in it, he takes ownership. Because we always talk about players taking ownership. And when I say ownership, that's not just dogging people and screaming at everybody. It's saying, this is my baby. I know exactly what's going on through this defense inside and outside.
How much do you think Kenneth Murray needs to be on the field?
He's got to be. I mean, when you have an athletic linebacker like that, he just has to be there. I know he struggles a little bit in space, but here's what he brings. We talk about, the identity of the team, the identity of what Denard Wilson, the defensive coordinator of the Tennessee Titans, want. He wants a guy that has an attitude. Look at the secondary we just talked about. Then now you got a linebacker that brings that same energy, that same attitude, that same stankness about wanting to fight. So it's just going to make everybody better because you have somebody in that linebacker position.
Yeah, I think that's going to be critical there. He's athletic. And that's where it kind of tells me maybe point towards having Amani Hooker be the communicator because then you don't have to take Kenneth Murray out of the game in dime packages.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then also, too, TD, is I think that from day one, I think Denard Wilson, the defensive coordinator of the Titans, should bring him in an individual meeting by himself and sit him down and say, listen, this is what I want from you. So now, if he says that to him, now Amani Hooker can take ownership and say, okay, now I can speak up more. Now I can line guys up. Now I can say, this is it. Put him in the right coverage. Put him in whatever they need to be. Why? Because the coach communicated to him on what he expects out of him.
I 100% believe that is what has to happen, right?
Absolutely.
And the fact that Wilson has the history of working with DBs, working with safety specifically, I think that should help enhance Amani Hooker. Let me ask you this, though, because we're talking about safeties. Elijah Molden.
Yeah.
Can they go into this season with him as the running mate for Amani Hooker, or do you think they have to look at that in the draft, or with this abundance of free safeties period that's out there in free agency?
I think you can get some cats later on in the draft, but I think Elijah Molden can be a good player. I just think that what's holding him back a little bit, he's just got to stay healthy. He's got to stay on the field. And he's got to make sure that he's available because you can be a great, safety or a great corner or whatever position you play, but if you're not available, then it's not going to mean anything. So I think if he stays healthy and, he just plays his role, I think he can be successful because who's that guy that, I forgot, he got in a fight with the guy from the wide receiver from the Texas, Johnson.
Oh, Courtland Finnegan?
Courtland Finnegan wasn't a big guy. Elijah Moses, not a big guy. But the one thing they have in common, they were fighters. So if they have that, he has that same mentality of going in there, whatever position they put me at, then I'm going to fight, and that just makes your defense better.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool watching how all this plays out.
I can't wait.
He spoke on free agency. You got the draft coming up. Real quick, if you had to – Yeah, let's ask it. Let's ask it. If you had to, your top three scenarios for the Titans at seven.
At seven, ooh. Oh, man, I think the number one scenario is going to get a left tackle. I mean, I think that's what you have to do. I mean, because you addressed the wide receiver position by getting Calvin Ridley, and you addressed a little bit of the offensive line at the center position with Cushenberry. So now, you know, the last couple of years, what we've been talking about is the left tackle position. I know they brought Dillon and some other guys in to try to help that position, but it just haven't worked out. So I think that you go with the left tackle. That's my first scenario. Like Joe Alt, you know, from Notre Dame, Latham from Alabama, Mills from Georgia, you can get that situation. And then my scenario two is people might think I'm crazy, but if Neighbors or Marvin Harrison Jr. slips to number seven, I know everybody's talking about left tackle, but you got to go get those dudes, because now they're talking about that they're getting the best player available. So if one of those two receivers drop, I'm doing a long jump to the podium and you know taking advantage of that situation. And then my scenario three is you know the linebacker position. Oh, not let me phrase that. I don't want to go with the linebacker position. I want to go with an edge rusher. I mean, I think the Tennessee Titans definitely need an edge rusher. So if there's a big time edge rusher there at that position, I think they got to figure out the way to establish that.
Yeah, three needs, three big-time prospects to fill them. That's it right there. I know you got a story. Come on and hit me with
one. No, you first, because I got one in the chamber, dog. Listen, you first. No.
Listen, I'm taking the week off.
No. How you going to know? Okay, I got one for you, man. Me and my baby, my baby Faith, my wife, we were watching the 1999 Super Bowl. Oh, not the Super Bowl, or on the way to the Super Bowl. She's like, baby, you played in the Super Bowl? I'm like, yeah, you know, we played the St. Louis Rams. I'm like, okay, baby. She's like, I don't want to watch that no more. So she's like, I want to watch 2000 Ravens win the Super Bowl. And this guy was running out on the field. And she said, baby, I did not know TD played for the Ravens. I said, no, baby, that's not TD. That's Terrell, son.
This is Traylon Burks, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. I had to pick a nice, mellow beat here because we're bringing in one of my guys. And, you know, I always joke with him. I say, you know, you should be narrating books. And when I bring him in, you guys are going to understand why that is. But without further ado, we're going to bring in Matt Waldman of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is a very, very excellent draft guide. There are two draft guides that I typically go by, and this is one of them. The other one is Emory Hunt's draft guide, but these guys go deep, so it's only right to bring Matt Waldman in. Matt, what's going on, man?
Hey, TD, it's good to hear from you, and, you know, I need to get a helium machine so that when I get introduced like that, I can come on and, like, completely belie the expectation, but, you know, I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, for sure, man. I always love the way you take the deep dives. I even, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Matt is a guy that I've known for a long time. I mean, we're talking about sitting there watching Stephen Hill film and critiquing the way he couldn't get out of his breaks. And, I mean, Stephen Hill is a guy that was drafted by the Jets, what, 8 years ago or so. So it just lets you know how far back we go. But I want to kind of just start off right off the bat, because this is a debate that you're seeing a lot of people get into, and you know, I fall on the Ricky Pearsall side of it, but Ladd McConkey versus Ricky Pearsall, where are you in that debate? And the thing that I want everybody to remember is just because you like one guy doesn't mean you dislike the other. You could like both, but just like one more.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I rank in the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, I think I've ranked about 54, 55 receivers, and then I do tiers. And, you know, I think rankings kind of stink unless you don't have tiers, because the NFL isn't ranking all these guys. They're really looking at, do we need a slot receiver? Do we need a guy who can play slot and flanker? These types of things. So when you look at Ricky Pearsall and Ladd McConkey, they're in the same tier for me, and they're high up in the same tier for me. But I like, you know, because of the way that I do work and that my work is consumed by a wide cross section of people, including, you know, NFL scouts, NFL evaluators, as well as fantasy fans, you know, I'm trying to look at what wide receivers can do total and how well they can do it. Well, from that perspective, you know, Ladd McConkey will make a terrific slot receiver, probably right off the bat. And there's a lot of things that he does well in terms of separation. He's got great separation footwork in terms of being able to use different types of releases. He's going to be very good on two-way go situations from the slot. He's very good on screens where he can set up blocks. He's great at hugging those blocks. And he's got that great speed that he can win on the outside eventually, and he probably will in a lot of situations in the NFL. But what he hasn't shown me yet, and it doesn't mean he can't do it, it's just that the reps he's shown on tape in real game situations, he hasn't had to counter with his hands against defenders. And really in the NFL, he's going to have to use both his feet and his hands really effectively to win against press corners on the outside. Whereas when I look at Ricky Pearsall, that's my guy if I'm going to go with one or the other. Because Pearsall has already shown skill on the outside to defeat press coverage with footwork and hand counters, and has shown a little bit more in tight coverage on the outside. And he can also work inside. They're both, you know, they both have excellent speed. They've got great acceleration and top end short area change of direction. So, you know, for me, I give the slight nod to Pearsall because he's already shown on tape in projectable ways that he has the outside game at the line of scrimmage against tight man coverage, that he has less of a ways to go or at least less to prove what he can do.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent breakdown there. And to your point, that's one of the things about Pearsall that I really like is just the way he does work on the outside and how sudden he is in and out of his routes. I mean, he's one of those guys, you look at him, you can say, you know, I bet he's a really good dancer, right? Because the way he's able to move and how he catches the football is really outstanding. We all know the one-hander, but even beyond that, you know, he's a very good catcher of the football. While we're on the topic of guys working on the outside, Troy Franklin, when you look at him, I mean, he plays with so much speed. He's an interesting player because you would think that at the combine, you know, he would have ran in the 4.3s. He didn't, but he still plays with so much speed. How do you look at a guy like Troy Franklin?
I like him, and I have him in the same tier as Pearsall and Ladd McConkey and in the upper half of that tier. To me, he has better releases, better routes, and better hands than maybe he's characterized. I think a lot of people saw him as just a speed threat on the outside at Oregon who just wins off play action and outruns people. But really, when I see the footwork combinations, the routes, there's some good snap with his routes at the top of his breaks where he's going to turn. And in the NFL, that's so important because when you're facing man coverage or savvy off coverage defenders who close fast, the tighter your turns are and the tighter your breaks are, the better opportunity you're going to have to be open to catch the football. Because as we know in the college game, if you've got two steps on somebody in the college game, you're wide open. If you have a step on somebody, generally not all quarterbacks in the college game are going to actually throw the receiver the ball because they're going to feel, they may feel he's covered. Mm-hmm. In the NFL, if you got a half a step on a guy, you're open. And sometimes you don't even have that. You just have half of a, you have a shoulder open. And so you got to cultivate that snap. You've got to be able to have those tight turns at full speed. And he shows a lot of those skills that if he doesn't fully have them yet, he's going to attain them. And I know that people look at the 176-pound frame and they're concerned, but we've seen what Devonta Smith has shown, what Jordan Addison has shown. Guys like Paul Richardson was a dog before he got hurt.
Colorado,
Yeah, and you look at guys like that, and certainly the size concerns us, but even DeSean Jackson, people who forget DeSean Jackson, and they only remember, say, the later part of his career where he'd play two games and look like an all-star and then not play for most of the season, they forget that this is a guy who had some top production receiving seasons year after year in Philadelphia, that if you start to count them and look at the list, he's on a small list of people who've done it. He played, had a long career. So Franklin's that type of guy that he reminds me a little bit of Jameson Williams in the sense of what people were hoping for from Williams, and Williams may still show. And I think you can use him in the short game off of hitches and curls, get the play action and double moves, and then, of course, crossing the field. He's going to be able to do work for you because he's very strong after the catch. So like him, he is among the top 10 players on my board, and this is a rich class. So for me, the top 12, really the top 8 to 12 players on this board would probably be top 5 most other years.
Right there. And we're talking to Matt Waldman, creator of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio and a senior staff writer for Football Guys. Staying on the receiver side of things, Malachi Corley, he's someone that's very – it's kind of difficult to evaluate him. You love to see the yards after catch that he gets. You love to see the amount of touches that he gets. But just that, it seems like there's a lot of manufactured touches for him. So you got to wonder how that will transfer to the league. What are your thoughts on Malachi Corley?
You set it up perfectly, TD, because really – a weapon as a runner, and when you watch him as a runner, you think, wow, this guy looks like what DJ Moore looked like, you know, when he was at Maryland, and just like a running back and a receiver with a running back's body and ability in the open field, and someone who could really attack with contact. And so that's great. He has competent hands. There's some moments where you really see his hands shine in tight spaces over the middle against contact. But when you say manufactured touches, you're right on the ball with that, because his route game needs development. I mean, right now he does well against zone, but against man-to-man, we need to see how much artistry he can use to win at the line of scrimmage. And it's not just about how many hand counters and footwork moves you have, but whether you can cultivate that right amount of contrast between patience and suddenness. Go watch someone like Davante Adams and watch how good he is at being able to be slow and then sudden. And at the times he does it, either at the line of scrimmage or at the top of stems and heading up in the breaks. And the best receivers do that well. And with Corley, we need to see him learn how to cultivate that, do a little bit more with his stem work to tell the story in an efficient way. If he can start to do that, then maybe we start to look at him as an aspiring DJ Moore type of player. But right now, to me, he's kind of more in that range of guys that people may have forgotten about, you know, like a Darius Stewart at Alabama, who was a terrific runner and physical, or a Cordero Patterson, where you look at Cordero and you say, wow, what a runner, what an open field player, and what a hoss of a physical guy. But are you going to be able to do more than manufacture touches for him and out of the screen game and RPOs and crossing routes where people run off the zone? And I think he can do more than that, but I think it's going to take him a little bit more time. And if a team decides we're going to use him as a return man and then as a gadget type of player, he could get labeled in that way if he doesn't grow out of it quickly. So it's going to be incumbent on him to show that level of progress. Otherwise, he's going to be lauded a lot for his physical skills, which are considerable, but not the conceptual and technical skills that are going to really drive a player's game forward to turn them into a starter.
Yeah, he's a guy, I think of Laviska Shenault when I think of Malachi Corley. You know, great comparison even with Cordero Patterson. I want to hit on the tight ends because obviously, you know, you look at the Titans, right? And Chigakonkwo is a guy that a lot of us really liked coming out. You know, he showed some promise as a rookie. Last year, you know, he had a tough start. Then he gradually came along. You got Josh Wiley, a giant tight end, a 6'6", 250, 260. Obviously, Brock Bowers is a guy that he's the shiny model. Yeah. He's the one that everybody wants, the top-of-the-line addition. Do you see a world where he's picked in the top 10?
Yeah, I could see that world because I don't think people may want to forget Aaron Hernandez in terms of his legacy and what happened. But as a player, He was a fantastic football player. Yeah. And if we can compartmentalize that for the briefest moment, and we're just talking about scouting, Brock Bowers has that ability as a runner, as a primary matchup receiver, someone who can win anywhere on the field. His reacceleration is really impressive for a man at 243. And so you look at him, or even a Vernon Davis, you know, those, you know, I think Vernon was a better athlete than Brock Bowers was, but you know, it was a while ago, but it's that kind of talent that Brock Bowers has to win the football outside or inside in the screen game, as a kind of a more of a move blocker as opposed to an inline blocker. He's got some decent techniques to move people and do some things on quick hitting blocks or lead blocks that can be helpful, but he's not that inline, you know, Kittle, Gronkowski type of blocker. He's more in the line of what you see Sam LaPorta in the way that he's used. So it's possible if a team sees a really strong fit and they know that getting that move tight end who's going to be the second guy on the field or the slot or their or a split end occasionally with certain matchups, and they know that they can drive that with how they vary their alignments, then I can see him being that kind of a weapon and value that early.
Yeah, and we're talking to Matt Waldman, creator of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio and a senior staff writer for Football Guys. Listen, who do you see as like that prom king runner-up at that tight end position? Think of like in the fourth round, fifth round, in that scenario, you know, your Jarrett Wiley types, your Jaheim Bells, those. Who do you have in that?
Yeah. Now, I'm going to name one that I'm probably off on just because I don't pay attention too much to narratives and I don't know. I've heard people all over the board on him. So excuse me if I say Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State, because some people may have him ranked a lot earlier. If we do, if you know that, we can skip him and I'll just mention him. Should I skip him or
no? This is your take. So I want it.
Okay. If Ben Sinnott sitting there in the fourth or fifth round, sure-handed receiver. I mean, very sure-handed, powerful ball carrier. He's one of these guys that you hit him, and it doesn't even look like you put a dent in him. He has great contact balance. He's much more mobile and explosive than you'd think. I mean, at the combine, he tested out very well. 6'4", 250, so he's a little undersized from a height perspective, but he's got, you know, he has that good weight on him. He's a decent, you know, blocker in the sense of, again, a move tight end who could probably give you a little bit more, depending on the type of blocks you want him to do, but he is terrific open field. He looked like a snowplow watching him in the Kansas game and in the Iowa State games. The way he just kept his balance, the efficient movement he has, he's niftier than you think. I mean, this is a guy with a 40-inch vertical leap at 6'4", 250, pretty impressive guy. Other ones that kind of come to mind for me, if you're looking for a blocker who could develop and seems to have decent hands but just seems to develop their routes, Tip Ryman out of Illinois certainly has all the physical attributes you're looking for. 6'4", 271, plays like he's more like he's 250 in terms of the speed. As a blocker, he plays like he's 271. So that's a good one. Dallin Holker is, you know, he's capable in a spread system as an H-back, lead blocker. You know, he's got some good work as a zone option, and I think there's potential with him as a man-to-man matchup receiver in certain looks because he has quickness, good change of direction skills. He's got the ability to drop his weight already right now, and he catches the ball well. So, you know, it might take a little bit of time. I like the Jared Wiley mention too, just because, a lot of people, Jared Wiley's that 6'6", 249 guy like Davis Allen and a couple other guys who I always joke to get overdrafted by the NFL and you're going to use them as basically a slot receiver against a linebacker running a corner sail route, and they're going to get like three of these opportunities a game, and that's about it. But Wiley's the guy that I think has more in the tank than those, like, Luke Stalker, high-cut, you know, players who were really good at Tennessee, but in the NFL, you know, too high-cut, maybe not great as a mover. Wiley has some of that bend and that ability to do more with underneath routes that could round out his game and make him more than just a – he's a tall guy. Let him match up, and we'll try and hit him up a zone here and let him, you know, catch the ball over people.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Luke Stalker. He was the assistant tight ends coach for the Titans last year. So life comes at you fast, man. You're talking about him in college, and now he's coaching.
Yeah. And, hey, you know, good player in college for sure. And, you know, the NFL, we're talking about the best of the very best on an athletic standpoint. And, you know, to be good enough to make the NFL – and he definitely played for a few teams. That's a statement right there, you know. So sometimes when we casually talk about guys, people go, "Oh, no good." And you go, "No, man. These guys are the top 1% of all football players trying to get into a league where if you're starting, you're probably the top 0.05% of football players."
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because we have guys in this local media where they say, you know, "He's a bum. This guy sucks," and he's a jabroni, all these other, you know, words. So I'm glad you said that, so that way people see it's not just me that feels that way. You know what I mean?
No,
so,
you got to respect these guys. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I laugh because I feel like basketball people have more respect for players than like football people do, because like basketball people, like, I watch YouTube videos of people talking about like basketball guys in their local gym, and they'll sit there and go, "You know, that guy probably played D1. And they say it with so much respect. And I'm thinking, you know, you could have a guy who had like an All-American career in football, and if he didn't become an all-pro player in the NFL, he's a bum.
He's a bum.
Just like, yeah, you don't get it. Yeah. You don't get it.
That's crazy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the type of analysis you get. That's why I strongly recommend going ahead and purchasing the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. You had an opportunity to get it at a discount, but it's April 3rd, so, you know, that is over. But regardless, whatever the price is, it is worth that. As he says, pleasantly shocking readers since 2006. I ain't going to be shocked, and you shouldn't be shocked either, because you heard the depth that he goes to. Matt, go ahead and tell them where they can find your stuff.
Sure, you can get a pre-draft and post-draft guide for one price of $21.95. And most people still who are usually longtime subscribers always tell me every year I should charge double. So you can get it there, mattwaldman.com. It's in PDF form. Everything's bookmarked. 1,183 pages of information just on quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end.
That's it right there. It doesn't get much better than that. Matt, I really appreciate you. We'll make sure that we keep in touch, man. Hopefully the next rotation, the draft events, Senior Bowl, et cetera, we'll get to catch up.
I would love that, and it's always a pleasure. Anytime you need me, just give me a call.
So that was Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. He is the creator of that. Football Guys, senior staff writer, man. Always good to talk shop with him, man. I appreciate him coming on. Had some great times there with Chris Sanders, man. He got me with that one, but it's all good, man. T-Sizzle, that's bad. But it's all right. I'll get my get back next week. I'll figure out something to say to him. Appreciate David James making it happen.
Yes, sir.
Hey, listen, man, this is what we do, right? We have fun. We have good times. We talk quality football. If you like this, definitely share it with your friends. Check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you find your great listening materials. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.